south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, a couple of loose ends to tie up from the last show. You know, I mentioned that word huelga. It's spelled H-U-E-L-G-A, huelga, which means street protest or strike. Now, let me tell you, I don't think I've ever been in a medium or large-sized Latin city for a day, you know, driving around, where I haven't seen at least one or two of these things. Could be just a small group of people standing around with signs in a central park. Could be a giant one where you've got 100, 200, 500, 1,000 people blocking roads and stopping traffic for hours and hours. So what's that all about, and what the hell are they protesting for all the time? Should gringos and expats be worried? Well, for one thing, you have to consider that throughout Latin America, a lot of the adult population and young adult population have tons of time on their hands because a huge segment of the population does not have a formal job. Oh, they work all right, part-time or in kiosks and stuff, but they're not punching the clock. Because I assure you, the people punching a clock, like, for example, working in some of these clothing maquilas, they're not going to have a huelga. They're not going to go on strike because they won't have a job the next day. But there is the odd case that even the maquila workers will go on strike if they've been fighting for some kind of minimum wage increase, or some politicians promise them some minimum wage increase, and once he's been elected, nothing happens, as usual, and they realize he's just a big BSer, and they get all pissed off. And then they take to the streets and block traffic. Wow, you mean that can happen? You think? Insert lunatic laugh track here. Speaking of lunatics, you know who's a poster child for a spit-bubbling, mental midget politician who's advanced way beyond the Peter Principle? Maxine Waters. Talk about two brain cells firing between a spirochete. But then again, even old Benjamin Franklin once said, "You get the politicians you deserve. No one puts them in office but you," which is the main reason I don't vote. But, you know, all is not lost. There does seem to be some kind of karma with career politicians. I mean, they do not age well. Especially being president. Man, that puts about 20 years on a person after 1 year in office. Look at Obama and Bush. And Bill Clinton, man, he's a walking skeleton. Have you seen that mug lately? Saw a close-up of him the other day. Looks like he's done more blow than Scarface. But I digress. We're talking about huelgas. Now, the truth is, Latin Americans love to protest. They'll go on a huelga at the drop of a hat. And it seems to be a social event with them, too. Hey, let's have a huelga. It's party time. I mean, look, I've walked through some of these picketing crowds during the peaks of some of these protests. They're more like tailgate parties than what they're really supposed to be. Serious get-togethers designed to throw the bums out. You know, as compared to strikes and sit-ins up in the States, the people in the huelgas here in Latin America are not all that pissed off. Mostly, they just seem to be having some fun. Though, of course, there are exceptions. Now, you know how it's always claimed that Latin Americans are the happiest people in the world? Well, they're damn happy even when they're protesting. However, if you ask me, I really think they're doing it all wrong. I'd say 90% of all the protests are done in the Central Park where all the government buildings are, which does absolutely no good at all. It's useless, just like it is in the States, specifically Washington, D.C. There are always camera crews around the White House and the Capitol building, filming a constant flow of picketers and protesters. And sometimes, if you look at the footage, you'll see some of the same people over and over. They seem to live for that stuff. For some, it's a job, and some people even get paid for it. You've heard about the George Soros connection and the magazine and newspaper ads advertising for protesters. Hey, it's a good gig for college kids and out-of-work actors, which is 99% of them. Good practice, good drama, especially for the actors. You know, sometimes I can't help but think back on the 30 years it's been since I've come to Latin America. I'm thinking that you guys live in a completely different alien world than the one I left. And it always ends with me thinking, man, how did I get so lucky to end up down here? Sorry if I keep saying that, but man, no truer words were ever spoken. Wait a minute, where were we? Oh yeah, here's another thing that's interesting about protesters in Latin America. You've heard me talk about Latin American universities. How every Latin country has its own public university system. Yes, they have private ones too, but the public ones, they're totally broke systems, just like the country's national health and social security systems too. Why? Because governments are running them. thoroughly corrupt governments. Are there any other kind? But just like with the national healthcare systems here in Latin America, the public university systems are virtually free. Sort of like what Burnt Bernie wants for kids up in the States. Though we all know nothing is for nothing and government institutions are heavily subsidized, still, you can't break the immutable law that says you get what you pay for, even with the Expat Files show. The truth is that enrollments are massive at public universities in Latin America because they're free. But the buildings are dilapidated, the grounds an ugly mess, and the bathrooms suck. Not to mention the computer and science labs are missing vital equipment. There's practically nothing about public universities in Latin America that doesn't suck, except the price. So those public university students have 1,001 reasons to have a huelga, and man, do they have their huelgas. However, it doesn't make much sense. They're biting the hand that feeds them. I remember my mother used to say, never complain about something you got for nothing. Don't complain. Go out and find something better and buy it. Anyway, I've been to the campuses of some of these universities. They're massive, and they're massively ugly, and they have massive huelgas all the time. Of course, nothing ever changes, neither do the reasons for the huelga. Number one is that the schools are underfunded because the government's corrupt. Like, that's some sort of news. However, when you're talking about private universities in Latin America, and I'd say in every medium and large Latin city, there's 5 or 10 of them. Well, it's amazing to check out their campuses. They appear to be first world all the way. The buildings are nice, the bathroom works, the power's on, the labs are well equipped, etc., etc. And guess what? Surprise, surprise. You take a walk through one of those campuses and nobody's protesting. Sure, once in a while there'll be a kid or two handing out pamphlets about this or that. Often it's some kind of announcement, something like, Oye, listen up. Come on down to the big rally tomorrow in the Central Park. You know, because that's where the big tailgate party is and we can protest our corrupt government at the same time. Hey, count me in. So then why are they protesting all the time at the public universities and at the private ones? There's almost no action like that at all. Why? Because the students have very little to complain about. They know their governments are corrupt and they completely suck, but it almost never affects them because they're going to a private school. Besides that, a lot of them, especially those going to the more expensive private schools, are living in a kind of bubble. You know, gated, guarded communities, sometimes with bodyguards, trips to my jammy shopping. Oh, and here's another surprise. Sometimes their own fathers, uncles, and other relatives are part of the problem. They've got malignant family members working at high levels of government. How do you think they can afford private schools like that? Oh, and just to give you a little idea of numbers here. For example, in Guatemala City, there's a big public university called USAC, University of San Carlos. It has over 100,000 students. I've been there. It's a huge, run-down, dilapidated campus that I would never admit to if I ever went there. As opposed to, for example, the very best private university in Guatemala. In fact, in polls that have been taken throughout Latin America, it often comes in at number one. First off, when you step foot on the campus, you can't believe how beautiful it is. But you have to remember it's also the most expensive private university, too. Tuition's about $5,000 a year, which is like a cheap state school up where you come from. But for Latin America, it's very expensive when you consider the cost of living down here and what people make. So only the top 1% of Latin families can afford to send their kids there. And they've only got around 2,000 students. Think about it. That's 1/50th the enrollment of the gigantic university that's public, USAC. By the way, that university, UFM, University of Francisco Marroquín, is the only 100% libertarian university in the whole world. In fact, when you walk in, they've got a gigantic sculpture of Atlas shrugging. You like that? Oh, and you know who's a professor at UFM? The famous Bitcoin Dan. He was the very first person in the world to teach a semester-long cryptocurrency and Bitcoin class, and it was at UFM. Here's another amazing fact. UFM will take absolutely no government money or government grants. They want to be beholden to no political party or politician. That's part of their written policy. Oh, and while we're at it, here's another very interesting part of their policy. You won't believe this. If you graduate with an MD from the medical school at UFM, University of Francisco Marroquín, they've got an agreement with Harvard Medical School in that you're automatically guaranteed entrance into a Harvard Medical School specialty program at Harvard Medical School up in the States. It's virtually automatic. If you want to do a specialty, you're in. Oh, and it's not to say Harvard is the be-all and end-all. It certainly is a nesting ground for future thieving, lard-ass politicians and bureaucrats up in the States. But we're talking about the medical school here. That's top-notch. It's always in the top 10. So is their business school. However, as far as journalism, poli-sci, and economics, Some more rational minds think the world would be better off if they were nuked. But we were talking about huelgas, right? Now, here's the thing that drives me nuts about Latin American huelgas. The idiots that organize these things, and by the way, there are many do-gooders from up in the States that come down specifically to rile up the locals and get them to start protesting. It's especially a common problem when we're talking about indigenous areas and areas way out in the boonies where companies have mining and mineral resource rights and power generation stations. It always strikes me as ironic when I'm watching the news and I see a bunch of poor indigenous people way out in the boonies picketing around machines that are breaking ground for a power plant. And most often they're hydroelectric power plants too, you know, renewable energy. And somehow you always see a couple of pale white gringos kind of mulling around and huddling with them. Man, do those do-gooders stick out like sore thumbs. Hey, don't get me wrong. I'm all for protecting the environment and stopping some of these industries from destroying the countryside and polluting the water, etc. But when you see a bunch of indigenous people protesting the groundbreaking of a power plant, when electric power is exactly what's going to bring them into the 21st century, well, I don't get it. But you know, every do-gooder has a cause. Unfortunately, a lot of the do-gooders, especially the college-aged ones, are part of a so-called charitable organization, which is actually a money-making machine for the guys on the board of directors and the higher-ups. And they, the college kids, are so happy to get that moment's pleasure from helping people, they don't realize there's a bigger scam going down right in the bowels of their own organization. But you knew that already, right? I mean, look at the scandals in the United Way, Red Cross, and on and on. That's why I always say you should never give a stinking dime to any charitable organization, especially if it's advertising on mass media like TV. By all means give, but give it directly to the person in need. I'm talking about the guy that needs a new pair of shoes, the kid that needs a computer or a bike. But we were talking about strikes and huelgas, right? Anyway, the thing I really hate about huelgas is that generally, all they really end up doing is screwing up traffic, sometimes for hours and hours. And all that does is piss off the average person who's trying to go to school or get to work. In the end, it has no effect on the stinking, lard-ass politicians at all. Because if there's some kind of traffic blockage, they can see that on the news, they'll have advance warning. It'll be on their smartphone apps too, like Waze. So they'll have a plan. They won't go down to their plush offices in the government district. They'll stay home or head out to the beach house. It's the common guy taking his car or the chicken bus trying to get somewhere who always suffers. Now, it's always been my contention that these protesters and organizers of the protests are complete clueless idiots, too, going about the thing in all the wrong ways. Now, if I was organizing a huelga, things would be completely different. I'd do a little homework, find out where all the congressmen live with their wives. You know, the main house. Not the house or apartment where their mistresses are holed up, but their main house, the one they live in with their wives and kids. Then I'd get my picketers there very early in the morning, like 5. Set up a thick perimeter right in front of the front door and driveway door. Because you can be certain if the pussbag in question's wife can't make it out to the health club, shopping mall, or beauty parlor, she's going to unleash all hell on her husband, which is probably the only way to get these guys to do anything, aside from the gentle art of graft. So that's what I'd do, but that's just me. Another option would be to follow the bag's wife to the beauty parlor and then set up the picketers outside the beauty parlor. Put a dent in that business. Then, I guarantee you, results will soon follow. Damn, if I was just king for one day. All right, one last word about huelgas. The question is, should gringos and expats be afraid? For example, you might be watching the 6 o'clock news. I doubt it because it's in Spanish, but let's suppose you're watching it. And the news lady with the impossible hourglass figure announces that the teachers or chicken bus drivers or whoever is planning a huelga for tomorrow and they tell you the streets where they're planning on hanging out. Well, it's something to think about, right? Should you be worried if you're going to be in the area? Will there be tear gas? Will there be violence? How about rubber bullets? Ouch. Well, the truth is there's almost never violence, force, or tear gas. That's like a 1 in 1,000 shot. Meaning 99.9% of all huelgas are totally peaceful. Problem is you don't want to be around the area because the traffic is going to be terrible. So when there's a huelga, don't worry about physical harm or fear. Worry about the traffic. However, you know what they say in the States, if it bleeds, it leads. So sometimes when you're watching the 6 o'clock news up in Milwaukee, you'll see some kind of Latin American protest with burning tires, tear gas, troops with helmets, billy clubs, and shields. That's why people stateside almost always think when there's some kind of protest in Latin America, it's like a scene from Beirut and people are getting mowed down left and right, Molotov cocktails are flying. That almost never happens, except in those certain very few countries that are on the brink of chaos and martial law, like Venezuela, Nicaragua. We've talked about that. And now, just recently, history is repeating itself in Argentina, and that country's monetary system's fallen apart. Though protests there have not become violent yet. In any case, I would not want to be living in Argentina right now. And as for Doug Casey and his big, expensive development there, it's called La Estancia. Well, in the famous words of Agent 86, sorry about that, Chief. Well, you can count on one thing. Argentina won't be the next Costa Rica, but it just might be the next Venezuela. Now, you might ask, is every single government in Latin America totally corrupt? The answer to that is absolutely. You know, I was having a little discussion about that very thing with a fairly intelligent 30-something Latin guy. He was a proud guy with a couple of fancy framed, gilded liberal arts degrees hanging on the living room wall. And of course, that only qualifies you to fill out an application at Starbucks these days. Still, he showed me how clueless even educated Latinos can be when he said, if only my government was like the U.S. government. I know you guys have Donald Trump and you have a lot of problems, but your government works. And I said, man, what planet are you living on? Where do you get your news? But you see, it's not about what kind of news they get. It's all about a stereotype. They sort of think of the U.S. government as how our parents thought about the U.S. government back in the days of Kennedy or Eisenhower. Sure, there was some corruption back then in the States. There always was. But there were many, many more honorable people, it seems. And back then, practically everyone liked their government, or at least were neutral about it and didn't say nasty things. They were patriotic. On top of that, they trusted their government. They truly believed government press releases and Walter Cronkite. Well, that mindset is still the attitude that most Latinos have about the U.S. Even the smart ones down here actually think if they could transplant the U.S. government system for theirs, that would cure corruption and be the engine to take them from third to first world status. Again, I can only say, what planet are they living on? By the way, that conversation ended with me saying, you know, I much prefer your corrupt government over my corrupt government. Because you see, down here, everybody knows your government's corrupt and they know who they can pay off. And the payoffs are small, nickels and dimes compared to the payoffs that are happening up in the first world. He said, come on, I don't believe it. You can't pay off the cops or government officials in the United States. You'd go to jail. I said, yeah, right. You pull out a 20 or a 50 and hand it to a state patrol cop, you're going to jail. But if you were to donate $100,000 to some senator's reelection campaign, and all you asked for in return was a West Point appointment for your useless kid, or maybe a no-bid contract for your business, well, it's what you call pay for play. Ask Hillary. In other words, here in Latin America, you've got nickel and dime corruption everywhere. Up in the States, it's a completely different kind of corruption, and only high rollers can play that game. For example, if you want to buy a judge down here in Latin America, it might cost you $5,000. To buy off a stateside judge, it might cost you a beach house in the Virgin Islands or a 6 or 7-figure trust fund in the Cayman Islands. Connected people in the States know how that game is played. Here's a little example for you that's really close to home. No names here, but a very close family relative had a godfather who was a U.S. senator. He's dead now. And he had a really nice mahogany desk in the office in his home. He once told me that desk was not an ordinary desk. It was worth $50,000, which was at the time in the 1980s about 2/3 of his yearly salary. He was making around $75,000 a year. So someone got a fabulous 18th century Chippendale desk and someone else got a favor. But he made sure to tell me the desk was not actually his. It was on loan. Wink, wink. So again, pondering the question, is every Latin country thoroughly corrupt? Absolutely. If you got the dough, you can get away with murder. It's done all the time. But as far as gringos and expats living down here and having a plan B, the only time we're ever affected by that stuff is when we get pulled over by the cops and you realize that if you grease the wheels a bit, things will go a lot smoother. Because, you know, we're just down here to live nice, calm, happy lives, captains of our own ships and all that, without any interference from government. We don't ask for favors. We just want to do our own thing and be left alone. And that's almost always what happens. However, to give you an idea how corrupt to the core these Latin governments are, let me read you a few excerpts from this article that just came out on September 12th. The title is, Peru's ex-president is denied bail as his wife makes vulgar outburst in court. This is from Reuters. It starts out, a former Peruvian first lady was dragged out of a courtroom in San Francisco on Thursday as she cursed a judge's decision to keep her husband, ex-president Alejandro Toledo, in jail pending extradition to Peru on bribery charges. Ex-President Toledo, 73 years old, is wanted in Peru to stand trial over accusations he took a $20 million bribe from Brazilian construction company Odebrecht during his 2001 through 2006 term. It says he was arrested in San Francisco in July and has sought to be released on $1 million bail. All right, me, Johnny here, little comment. Now, think about that for a second. He wants to be released on $1 million bail. Where in the f*** does a president or anyone have $1 million cash to put up for bail? Isn't that like saying, yeah, I'm guilty, here's $1 million, just let me go. Then I'll get out of your country, your court system, and your hair, and move to another more friendly country that won't mind me parking my $19 million in their banks. So again, the question is, who can come up with $1 million cash bail? Remember, he asked for that, and his salary back then was only 100 grand a year. All right, then it says, the Odebrecht company acknowledged in a 2016 leniency deal that it had bribed officials in a dozen Latin countries, including Peru, to secure public works contracts. A former Odebrecht executive has said under oath and has documents to prove former President Toledo asked for a $20 million bribe and got it. Meanwhile, in San Francisco, U.S. Federal Magistrate Judge Thomas Hixton ruled that ex-President Toledo was too much of a flight risk to free, citing what he described as connections to many influential people. After the ruling was announced, the ex-president's wife, a Belgian-American anthropologist, Elaine Karp, shouted, "What kind of effing trial is this? Is this a joke?" Me, Johnny here, you know what I'm thinking? She's thinking, "What, we can't just pay the $1 million and get the hell out of here? What's the world coming to?" All right, then the article goes on to say, the outburst in court was the latest drama in the far-reaching corruption scandal that has hit Peruvian politicians particularly hard. Earlier this year, another former president of Peru, Alan Garcia, killed himself to avoid arrest in the Odebrecht probe. Two other former presidents are under investigation, and one is under house arrest. Then it says ex-president Toledo has been considered a fugitive from Peru since 2017, when a Peruvian judge ordered him detained to keep him from fleeing or obstructing the probe. But he was outside the country at the time and refused to return. By the way, that's the same thing that's happening right now with ex-president Correa of Ecuador. He's been ordered to return to stand trial for corruption while he remains a fugitive in Europe and will not go back. Meanwhile, it says, as far as Peru goes, former President Alberto Fujimori is serving time in prison right now for human rights violations and graft. Not to mention there are two ex-El Salvadorian presidents in jail. The wife of the ex-president of Honduras is in jail, and the sitting president of Honduras is under investigation for drug trafficking. Meanwhile, you've got the president and ex-president of Guatemala in the slammer, and on and on and on. Almost makes guys like Clinton, Obama, and Bush look like Boy Scouts. All right, speaking of corrupt politicians, are there any other kind? Comes an email on that very subject. This is from JJ. He says, "Dear Johnny, I've been down to Latin America a number of times. I was in Latin America some 25 years ago when I was in the Peace Corps. And I can tell you the politicians are corrupt, and also a lot of the do-gooder organizations, the so-called NGOs. And there's an endless jockeying for power in Latin American politics. It just won't stop. And if you've noticed, you'll find the most violent times of the year are when the election politics are heating up. It's not unusual for candidates to bump each other off before the primaries and runoffs. It's so common it doesn't even make front page news. We all know once you work your way up the political ladder, you're on the gravy train, and those jobs, man, it's crazy. Everyone claims they hate politicians, but secretly, everybody wants to be one. For the power and the favors you can bestow and the gravy train that comes along with it. The question is, should gringos and expats in Latin America worry about that? I say, nah. Gringos living in most Latin countries are generally totally divorced from the screwed up politics and the problems the sweaty masses have with their own governments, unless you're dealing with a socialist dictatorship like Cuba, Venezuela, or the nut job in Nicaragua. Oh, and Johnny, I for one do remember in your earlier Expat Files shows you talking about Nicaragua and how you didn't much recommend it. Even when you were getting testimonials and emails from people saying, that's going to be the next Costa Rica. I listened to you. You held your line. You never gave in. You said, no way would you recommend a country with an ex-Sandinista guerrilla at the helm. All right, then, JJ says, I've been there myself. In fact, I did a Peace Corps stint there. I never recommended that place for settling down either, not even way back when. When you got the Sandinista socialist in charge, no thanks. It was all good and calm as long as the Chinese were dumping dough in for the canal that never materialized, but now it's a poop hole. Though I'll tell you, Nicaraguan real estate is a hell of a deal. As for Guatemala, Johnny, a country you talk about quite a bit, it's fine for gringos and expats as long as you're in the right neighborhoods and the right towns and cities. That's true of anywhere in Latin America, in the States too. In fact, Johnny, I lived in Guatemala 25 years ago, also a Peace Corps stint. Can you believe I was there when the Civil War was going on? And guess what? All the gringos were fine. Never a single incident. That is to say, with any of the normal gringos and Europeans. But that's not to say there weren't a few problems with some of the gringo do-gooders that came down and wanted to go way up in the boonies where the action was. That's neither smart nor recommended when a civil war is going down. But do-gooders will be do-gooders. Personally, I'm not that brave. As for corruption, it really doesn't matter who's in power. They're all corrupt a-holes. They don't care about the little guy. They don't care about the public. They generally fleece the public and make a habit of sucking up to the U.S. and other first world governments who dole out the aid that they proceed to skim. And sometimes when things get too out of hand in the Human Rights Department generally, the U.S. will cut off their aid or threaten to cut off their aid. Then there'll be a big U.S. mission and a bunch of diplomats flying down. They'll have a week of Cristal, champagne, and penthouse parties at the Hilton. The local politicians will beg for mercy, kiss and make up, make more empty promises. And then the IMF will give them another massive loan. That's the MO for all Latin governments. They know the trough to feed in. And thinking of my jammy, as you call it, Johnny, I know you wouldn't be surprised to find out, you probably know this already, if you did a search, you'd find every Latin president, vice president, cabinet member, and congressman have a house or a condo in Miami. I wonder, how does that happen when the average salary for a Latin American senator or congressman is between $35,000 and $50,000 a year, which is still a king's ransom of a salary in Latin American countries? So, Johnny, the takeaway on my email, gringos, expats, and people with a plan B in Latin America, should you worry about the corrupt Latin American politics and their endless jockeying for power? Nah, don't worry. Be happy. Be happy you're in Latin America and not up in the States. Signed, JJ. All right, thanks for that, JJ. I couldn't have phrased it better myself, except to say that no matter how corrupt Latin governments are, at least they put some of these guys behind bars, something they never do with the high-level pustulant scumbags you have in politics up in the States. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.